This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. The Monday after a long holiday weekend that was upended by a giant power outage, New Hampshire seems almost back to normal, with fewer than 100 people still without electricity. But even though the lights and heat are largely back on, Granite Staters are now asking lots of questions, including why so many major outages lately? Is it just the weather, which is often blamed? Or do these incidents reveal weaknesses in our state's electric infrastructure and response systems? Flaws that could be remedied. That's what we're looking into this hour in The Exchange. And let's hear from you, your stories of the outage and your questions about it, whether the Thanksgiving event was your first experience with this or yet another in a succession that you've dealt with in recent years. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests in the studio. Sam Evans-Brown is here, NHPR's environment and education reporter. Sam, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Perry Plummer, director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He previously was fire chief in Dover. And Perry Plummer, it's nice to meet you. Thank you also for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And a little bit later, we will have two guests from various utilities in New Hampshire. We'll hear from Public Service in New Hampshire and also from Unitil. But Perry Plummer, to you first, why do we keep seeing these giant outages? We've got that epic ice storm in 08. Then we had Snowtober in, I think it was 2010. We had a windstorm in 2011. We have this in 2014. What is going on?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is the weather patterns are changing. There's no question about the situation with climate change, and there are getting more of these types of storms. And what's happening is the weather patterns aren't moving as quickly, so they're sitting over areas. So in the past, you'd get an inch of rain. Now it's stalled, and it's sitting and getting 3 inches of rain, or in same situation with snow and those types of things. With that being said, you're getting longer cold weather because when a cold snap comes in, it sits longer. And so the weather patterns are changing, and that is of concern to us long-term and short-term. So that's part of the issue. As far as power outages going, actually, we've had some very large power outages, no question about it, this being the fourth largest in New Hampshire's history. Although on a small scale, the vegetation management system that the utility companies have embarked in over the last few years has shown some signs of small outages not being as bad as they were. In this case, this was a unique storm because large trees came down, which were outside the vegetation allowable trimming area. So that caused larger power outages. So that vegetation trimming management system didn't show its value as much as on the smaller outages that they've had recently. But this storm is a unique storm for sure.
Well, it seems like every year we're saying that, though. You know, this was big because of the ice, or this one was big because it was October and there were still leaves on the trees. So every time we go around, we're saying, wow, this was unique.
There's no question about it. And you know, our word is that these things are going to continue to happen, both from a snowstorm standpoint and a flooding standpoint. So we have to look at, you know, how do we manage our families? How do we manage these as an individual? How do we stay prepared as individuals to take care of our families? In this case, the storm was unique because it was obviously wet, sticky snow, and it just happened to be the right temperature for that. The temperature dropped just a little more than they thought it was going to be, so there was a little bit less rain, but very, very high moisture content in the snow. The other piece was no wind. Typically, that sounds like a good thing in a storm. In this case, there are no wind at all. You want a little wind because the trees move a little bit and it shakes the snow off as it comes down. In this case, there was no wind at all, so it just kept mounting up, and obviously you could see the damage caused by that. There's a lot of trees and power lines down.
Sam Evans-Brown, what's the big picture here? You know, is this just life in New Hampshire, and if you don't like it, move to Arizona or what?
Well, certainly the big the real big picture is that everyone who studies the climate, as Commissioner Plummer said, anyone who studies the climate will tell you that we are seeing more extreme events, and the models are telling us we will continue to see more extreme events. So that's one part there. The other part is that, you know, as population grows in the southern tier, any extreme weather event will hit harder. I mean, because there's two sides. I mean, if there's going to be more damage if there are more things to damage. So the higher the density of the population in the parts of the state that are hit, the more damage you'll see. You know, and then the next question is then how do you mitigate this? And, you know, that's of course a very long conversation, one that you know, with vegetation management, trimming the trees back. I'm sure a lot of people have noticed the utilities have been getting more aggressive about this. But then there are other questions as well. I mean, will there be incentives for the utilities to pre-stage crews so that they can recover quickly? And on and on.
Pre-staging crews, so getting ready in advance, even if the worst doesn't happen, Sam.
Right, calling in truck crews from New York and Canada and other, you know, and other regions before the storm even starts, as opposed to waiting and seeing, oh, you know, we are, you know, 180,000 people without power. Now it's time to call the trucks.
Gotcha. Well, speaking of the utilities, we have with us now on the line Alec O'Meara. He's media relations manager for Unitil. And Mr. O'Meara, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we keep learning from these storms, but as Perry Plummer says, each one seems unique. So what do you think? What did we learn from this one?
Well, I mean, we have a philosophy as an organization to learn from every one of these major weather events we've seen over the past 5-6 years. Each time we have the event, and then about a week or so after, once we know everything is mopped up and everything's where it is, we all sit down and we talk about the event, and we talk about what things we might be able to change, tweak our restoration plan. I mean, for better or worse, we certainly had a lot of practice lately. So, you know, right now we feel like we're in a pretty good place as far as how we're getting ramped up and how we're attacking these things.
Well, and you're right. We have had a lot of practice. Again, I just listed off, you know, the other major weather-related outages in recent years, and yet they keep happening. So it kind of makes me wonder, what are we learning and why can't we apply that so it isn't as bad as it was this past Thanksgiving?
Well, after each one of these events, not only are we are making changes after each one of these events as well. Following 2008, we hired a senior-level emergency response director to coordinate. We applied the instant command system. We revamped our website. We revamped our outage map. We use Twitter and Facebook now to talk about these events. They keep happening, but each storm is severe. I've said many, many times, when Mother Nature wants to win one of these things, she wins. if there's a big storm, you know, and we really haven't even seen what the worst-case scenario is yet. A worst-case scenario is a Category 3 hurricane that comes up from the north. It's happened. It happened in 1938, and when that storm hit at the time, I believe something like 40% of the trees in New England came down. 40% of the trees in New England came down in 1938. That hasn't happened yet. That's the one we're waiting for.
Well, and New Hampshire was largely spared from Hurricane Irene, but Vermont, you can still see the evidence of the damage in Vermont.
That was a tropical storm.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting what you said, Alec, about, you know, we're trying harder to stay in touch with customers. We have updates. We're using Twitter. We're using Facebook. I always wonder about this, though. You know, when the power is out for, well, mine was out for almost 2 days. You know, after a while, you don't have access to your smartphone. It runs out of charge. The laptop runs out of charge. You certainly can't turn the computer on. So I just wonder what other methods you guys are thinking about using to stay in touch with people, to give them information when they don't have power.
Well, you folks, you know, we talk constantly with radio stations. We talk with print newspapers. Our customer service line is a very valuable tool, keeping folks informed as far as what's going on. Really, when these types of events hit, we see the media as one of our key partners as these things go on, helping us get the key messages out to our customers that, you're right, may not have that smartphone and can see the Twitter and Facebook. That said, we have found that the folks that do have access to that might run it in their car charge, that's an information lifeline for them. And it really seems to have changed the way the people who have that are communicating with us and learning about these events.
Well, and Sam Evans-Brown, Alec, talked about pre-planning. You know, maybe we should call in the crews, even if there turns out not to be a major outage. What did Unitil do in terms of pre-planning?
We did that. We actually, part of our storm philosophy is we reach out for crews ahead of time. We do that. We did that in this event. Our planning started, I believe, 2 days in advance of this storm. We had additional crews on property. We were ready to go. We actually thought we had, above average for this type of weather event because we knew the next day was Thanksgiving. We wanted to really try and have a really hard push on this storm in the overnight hours, but then everything just, there was no wind. It just sort of let everything just sit there and sit there and sit there. And if you pull a rubber band as hard as you can, and it just snapped.
Wow,
Yeah, so it was tough. So once we saw that, we were like, okay, we got to get some even more crews. So we went out and we talked to Canada in the overnight hours. This is before the sun was up on Thanksgiving, and we got even more crews in. And for us, this particular event was effectively a 48-hour event. We had 99% of our customers restored by Saturday morning, and we have been in normal operations basically for the whole weekend.
Well, Perry Plummer talked about that same phenomenon, Alec, that weather system's just sitting there. Perry, did you want to jump in?
From a pre-staging crew, that's not an uncommon phenomenon. Governor Hassan, when she came into office, met with all the utility companies, and we talked about those communications and pre-staging crews. And before every storm, that's a question that she has for us and the PUC and the utility companies. What pre-staged crews are there? How many do they have? Where are they coming from? So she's on top of that pre-planning on a regular basis. And all the utility companies are very communicative about that and know who they can get for crews, and they have the plans. In this case, they were very prepared for the storm that was predicted by the National Weather Service. The truth is, the wind died down and the temperatures rose just a little bit. And so that changed the dynamic a little bit. So that isn't that pre-staging is a very common practice. And in this case, just it's important to note that this was the fastest restoration of power of that many people in New Hampshire history. So although the storm was very, very bad, all the utility companies restored power quicker than they ever had in the past and had more crews in New Hampshire than they've ever had in the past.
Well, Alec O'Meara, before we head into a break, final thoughts from you on lessons learned from this latest outage.
Well, we haven't had that meeting yet. We're going to have that conversation. It's going to happen. We're still sort of reeling and getting back into the swing of things here. So we will have that conversation. I'm sure we'll find new ways to sort of tweak. Like I said, one of the things that was great about this particular storm, though, is by and large, most of the customers we heard back from were thankful and appreciative and really talked about the crews working 24 hours, round the clock to get folks on. And that was just really nice to hear.
So, well, it was Thanksgiving after all.
It was Thanksgiving after all.
Thank you very much, Alec, for being with us. We appreciate it.
No problem.
That's Alec O'Meara, Media Relations Manager for Unitil. In a little bit, we'll hear from Bill Quinlan. He's President and CEO at PSNH, and we'll start hearing from you, too. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the major Thanksgiving power outage that many Granite Staters were dealing with. Lessons learned. We'd love your stories of the outage and your questions about it, whether this Thanksgiving event was your first experience with a major outage or yet another in a succession that you've dealt with in recent years. We're looking at some of the issues surrounding this, not just the weather that made it happen, but also whether it reveals possible flaws in our electric power infrastructure. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. Governor Maggie Hassan joins us now by phone. And Governor Hassan, thanks for taking time out. We appreciate it.
Sure. Good morning, Laura.
Well, what's the big takeaway for you as governor from this latest storm? And by the way, did you yourself lose power?
My family was fortunate. We only lost power for a very short amount of time. And we had a generator as well. So it did not impact us very much. But clearly it impacted an awful lot of people in the state of New Hampshire. And it came at a particularly difficult time. Thanksgiving being such a wonderful holiday and so important to all of us. So in terms of takeaways, it was the fourth largest outage that we've had in the state's history. It was an outage that our utility companies had been preparing for to some extent, but I think the weather predictions were slightly different than what actually happened, and that affected the degree of the outage, how big it was, because the snow was wetter and heavier, and there was more of it than had been predicted. And you know, I'm pleased that PSNH and Unitil both exceeded their restoration estimates, so that power was out less than it might have been. But obviously, when you're without power, you know, every minute is too long. So what we really do at the state level through the Emergency Operations Center is make sure that we are in constant communication with the utilities, as well as our Department of Transportation and our state police, about what's really happening on the ground. And then also in regular communication with all of our local emergency management directors, because one of the things we find is a kind of disconnect sometimes between what utility companies think is happening on the ground and what our customers and citizens are telling.
What's the economic impact of these widespread outages that we've seen in recent years, Governor Hassan? Especially this past weekend, it was supposed to be the kickoff to the holiday shopping season, and a lot of us really didn't feel like shopping. We were still, you know, mopping up.
Well, and it certainly can have a significant economic impact. Our priorities, you know, one of the things we do with the EOC, with all of the state agency commissioners and representatives in the room or on the phone, and the utilities, is really prioritize how we're going to get power restored most effectively. So public health and public safety facilities are clearly the big priorities, but economic hubs are too. And one of the things we really wanted to make sure was those economic hubs for this important shopping weekend were back up and running as quickly as possible, also because they're good places to go to if you're without power and heat. That being said, certainly a lot of people had to focus on the outage and not on their other plans, and we will be looking at what the economic impact of that is moving forward.
One last question for you, Governor Hassan. Some people are saying this isn't just unpredictable, unlucky weather. It reflects some real weaknesses in our power infrastructure. We keep having these weird storms. Okay, let's improve the infrastructure so that they're not as devastating. What do you think?
Well, certainly that's something that we all are looking at. Our 10-year energy strategy that we just released this fall, it's the first time we've had an energy strategy for the state in quite some time, looks at how we make the grid more resilient and flexible. And that's one of the things moving forward we need to do. We try, you know, I wish we never had these outages, but we do. And we try, when we do have them, to learn from that experience, learn about whether there are better things we can do with vegetation control around wires, learn whether there are different kinds of grids or places to strengthen the grids moving forward. And we certainly are going to be doing an after-action analysis to see how we can do this better and how we can prevent such widespread outages moving forward.
All right, Governor Hassan, thank you very much for giving us some of your time this morning.
Thank you so much. Take care.
That's Governor Maggie Hassan again. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at the big outage that many of us saw over the long Thanksgiving weekend. Lessons learned. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining us by phone is John in Exeter. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Hey, good morning. It's great to be on the radio.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of my observations, it's not really critique of the infrastructure, but it's an observation that the trees next to the power lines are getting bigger and older, and it seems inevitable to me that they will fail and bring down the infrastructure. Just since the show's been on the air, I've been watching, and there are big trees over our electrical lines everywhere. And as an observation, in my home in Exeter, during the ice storm, a few big oak trees came down, and we were without power for 9 days. Trees that size are still over those power lines, and I think it's inevitable. They're going to be coming down, and it's going to hurt.
So what's the policy, John, on the tree trimming? Is that what you're asking?
I would take down the big trees. As a society, we need to evaluate our environmental aesthetics and say, hey, they're great, big, beautiful trees, but there's a trade-off. Those big, beautiful trees are going to come down, and this problem will be exacerbated.
John, thank you so much for calling in. And Sam Evans-Brown, your thoughts on that? And then I'm happy to let everybody know that Bill Quinlan is here. He just came in from that event with Governor Hassan, President and Chief Operating Officer at PSNH. Bill Quinlan, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
Go ahead, Sam, on the trees, and then Bill for you, too.
Yeah, so the utilities really got aggressive about their tree trimming in after the 2008 ice storm, and again after the Snowtober event. They were really sort of hauled to the carpet by the PUC about a number of their preparation practices following those events.
That's the Public Utilities Commission.
Yes, the Public Utilities Commission that oversees the utilities. And I personally have noticed, you know, you go out into the world and you see they're trimming more aggressively. So they are trying, as Director Plummer mentioned earlier. This event was really outside of what they're planning for, though, because they're cutting back a buffer, and there are trees coming down from outside of the buffer that we're bending over so much more than they're really trimming for. And I think utilities are really they're engaging in a balancing act, because after a storm like this, you'll get callers who say, you know, take down the big trees. But if you 9/10 of the year go out there and are hacking away at trees that are, for many people, the reason they come to New Hampshire, there'd be outcry there, too.
Well, sure. And the trees do provide benefits in terms of air quality, and they keep the groundwater clean because those wonderful root systems, we've talked about this before, Sam, you know, help keep water clean and so forth. And of course, the tourism benefit. And it just makes New Hampshire a nice place to be.
Right. So they're on a tightrope there. Deciding how much to cut and how much to leave.
Well, this is a big issue, and Bill Quinlan, I'd love to hear from you on this. After these weird storms that we've seen in the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, what's the policy now in terms of who's responsible for cutting those trees back to the point where they don't pull down the lines?
Yeah, so for the most part, it is the utility's responsibility to have what we call a vegetation management program, and we're trying to strike the right balance between trees that present a risk to our infrastructure and the aesthetics that we all recognize are important to a state like New Hampshire. You know, as a general matter, we trim trees along our electrical infrastructure as opposed to removing them. And we trim about 1,700 miles of our infrastructure a year.
Wow.
So every 4 years, our entire system is trimmed. During the trimming, if we identify trees that present a unique risk, we actually seek to remove those, and we remove about 10,000 to 15,000 trees a year, which is a large number of trees, and those are the ones that present the most immediate risk. But it is a matter of balance, and we think we're striking the right balance, but that risk is going to continue to be present, particularly when you have severe weather that we experienced Thanksgiving Eve.
What's the policy, Bill, in terms of, let's say, my neighbor has this huge giant tree that is, and I'm not saying this is my case, but I have this huge, they have this huge giant tree. It's right over the power lines on our street. You know, they don't want to trim it because it's lovely and it's been there since, you know, great-great-grandma lived there. I mean, what's the policy there?
Yes, if it presents an immediate or significant risk, we do have the ability working locally to remove trees. More often than not, we try to work with homeowners on a consent. You know, we obviously advise them in advance of the risk. And in most instances, thankfully, in New Hampshire, our landowners and our customers understand that, and they agree to the removal of the tree. And we try to do that on a case-by-case basis.
Well, and this is the last question. I have to ask you this on the tree issue again, Bill, because every time there's a major storm, some people say, why don't we just bury all these power lines? This keeps happening year after year after year. What do you think?
Yeah, so burial, you know, probably the principal reason not to bury power infrastructure is the cost. You know, a while back, I think it was in 2009, a study was done as to what would it cost to bury Public Service of New Hampshire's electric lines. And I believe the number was $23 billion, something of that magnitude. So it's cost prohibitive to do it at scale. You know, where circumstances require it, we do pursue burial of infrastructure, but it's fairly selective and it's not widespread at this point, due primarily because of the cost. There's one other factor, which is when you do have an interruption in an underground system, the restoration takes much longer. Actually locating the interruption and repairing it takes many days.
You got to dig up the whole street instead of just sending a crew with a truck to to go up. Sam, real quick, and then we'll go to our callers.
So burial is definitely the first question that a lot of people ask after a storm like this, but it's not the only way of, quote unquote, hardening the grid or making the grid more resilient. There's also questions of to how you're going to reinforce the utility poles. You can do extra guy wires, things like that. So there are other ways that utilities can address this, and I'm sure they are doing some of that. The big question that a lot of sort of environmentalists and sort of new smart grid thinkers are talking about is to what extent can you sort of build in redundancy to the grid? So the key phrase here is microgrids. Down after Hurricane Sandy down in Connecticut, they mobilized $18 million, which is not a huge amount of money, but to build what are called microgrids, which is to say you're going to plop a small-scale generation source in the middle of a neighborhood so that if the line to the coal plant 100 miles away goes down, you still can power, your police station, your hospital, and a few key points of infrastructure. You don't see that happening everywhere. Connecticut's really the first state to do that, and I think a lot of utilities are watching. They're sort of the first over the wire, and they're going to see how it goes there before any sort of program like that gets expanded.
And Laura, that's really interesting.
I might add to Sam's comments here. As you know, I came to New Hampshire from Connecticut about a year ago. That program was something I actually led. And I think microgrids certainly have their place. A college campus or a small town center where you have critical facilities like hospitals, shelters that are closely aligned, you can tie them together in a microgrid, and it's a good way to keep some sense of normalcy when the actual grid is down. Moreover, there are things you can do to build in resiliency and redundancy into the grid itself. We refer to that as distribution automation. At Public Service of New Hampshire, we launched an early phase of automation this year, and we're going to continue to build out the amount of technology and automation on our grid for the next 5 years.
Automation in terms of what?
Redundancy in power supply, the ability to operate the grid remotely, the ability to provide power supply through multiple different lines. And it's basically a way to collapse the impact of a power outage. You're still going to have the impact of the tree, for example, on the infrastructure. But if you have another way to get power into that area and you can do it remotely, it'll hasten the restoration very much so, and you could collapse the outage itself.
That's interesting. Okay, yes. And I would have appreciated that over the holiday weekend, but I know I wasn't alone. Here's an email from John in Goffstown. He says, we live in a state with many trees. Mother Nature cannot be beaten. When extreme weather hits, our exposed utility lines are potential victims of falling trees. The temporary solution, John says, for many people is buy a generator. If you live in New Hampshire and don't have a generator, then you have no one to blame but yourself. Otherwise, just deal with it, John says. While hundreds of utility crews work very hard in harsh conditions, ironically, often over holidays, restoring our power. And you're right, John. I saw so many people out working on Thanksgiving and the day after. What about the generators, though, Perry Plummer? A lot more people do seem to have generators these days. How does that change the equation? Thanks, John, for the email.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, 10 years ago, when the power's out, you could look down your street and tell, power's out, nobody has power. Now you have to really open your door and listen to see how many people generators because your neighbor has them. So it's even tough to tell if the power's out. But certainly, self-preparedness for the first 72 hours in any type of storm, in any type of emergency, is really important. And we're trying to preach that nationally. First 72 hours, be prepared to take care of yourself without power, without emergency services, 72 hours. If you do that, most storms, you're gonna be fine. So the emergency generator situation is a good one. For people that have those means, a standby generator is great. It really puts that sense of preparedness back on you and that resiliency. However, with generators, especially with portable generators, there are some risks. You want them professionally installed. You want to understand, and please get carbon monoxide detectors in your house. Every year we have carbon monoxide deaths during storms because of generation. We had one this year. Our one storm death was because of a generator in a barn in a basement. Person went down to fuel it, became overcome. It's an odorless, colorless gas that's deadly. So carbon monoxide detection is absolutely key. If you do one thing, if you get a generator, get carbon monoxide detection. And obviously, have it installed professionally, and make sure that you understand that that also adds a risk to line workers. If you don't have it installed professionally or correctly, it can backfeed the lines, and the poor line worker that's out there trying to get your power back has an energized line that shouldn't be energized. So certainly there's some risk there, but generators are fantastic, and certainly anybody that has the means to do them, that would be a very, very good investment into the safety of your family.
Let's take a call. Thanks for that email. And Sue is joining us from Auburn, Maine. Hi, Sue. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi. Well, I'm fortunate that I didn't lose my power, but I've spent a lot of time in Florida, so I know how to deal with power outages. My question is, with the 7 feet of snow that those people, poor people, got in Buffalo, I never, ever heard anything about, you know, power outages there. How do they deal with power outages?
You know, more than one person raised this question to me over the weekend. Sue, thank you so much. Do you want to jump in on that, Bill Quinn, then? 7 feet of snow in Buffalo.
Certainly. I'd provide my observations, and then Perry can. You know, one of the things that Perry highlighted was the consistency of the snow here and the lack of wind. Okay, so what we had were heavy, wet snow with no wind, which was a very bad combination. If you looked at our, if you look at the trees across the state and you look at our power lines, you'll see that the snow accumulated and clung to all of
it's
that.
It's stuck there.
It's stuck, you know, described by many as oatmeal or mashed potatoes, which is exactly what it was. You know, in Buffalo, as I understand it, most of the snow they received during that most recent event was dry, fluffy snow, similar to what we experienced in the North Country during this event. So if you look at the number of outages we had in the North Country, you'll see very few, if any. So that was the big determining factor here, which is the consistency of the snow.
Perry, real quick.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, snow totals themselves are not indicator of the risk to our electrical system for sure. The other thing is the nature of our state. We're a very treed state. You know, we have a lot of trees. You know, if it's in a downtown city, you don't have trees coming down either.
Okay. Well, Sue, thank you for the question. We'll take more of your questions and comments in just a moment. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the latest storm that caused a huge power outage over Thanksgiving weekend here in the Granite State and whether this storm reveals weaknesses in our state's electric infrastructure. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Joining us in studio is Bill Quinlan, President and CEO of PSNH, also Perry Plummer, Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and Sam Evans-Brown, NHPR's Environment and Education Reporter. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Sam, you know, we keep talking about what we've learned from past storms, whether it's the epic ice storm of 08 or Snowtober, and so on and so on. You've been looking back at some of that reflection from past storms. What linkages can you draw for us, Sam, between those storms and this one, especially in terms of what we learned and what we continue to learn?
Well, so after Snowtober, one of the big takeaways that the utilities, that the PUC tried to give to the utilities was they need to improve their forecasting. They need to be getting weather forecasts that are at shorter intervals. You need a forecast for this county for the morning and the afternoon, you know, differentiated across the entire service area, and you need to build some sort of model that can use that forecast and mesh it with your past experience to give you some sort of prediction of how many assets you need to have on hand before the storm starts. I think we've heard a lot today about how the weather forecast was different than what was expected, and I think that's definitely true, that people were caught off guard. You know, the temperature was just a few degrees colder than the forecasters were expecting when the snow first started. So in that regard, it is an anomaly. I would be interested to hear from Mr. Quinlan to what degree the lessons from the Snowtober report that the PUC gave them were taken advantage of.
Yeah,
this
that
time.
Was a tough one because, again, there were still leaves on the trees. And so the trees were really heavy. I remember trick-or-treating in the snow and seeing these poor trees. Bill Quinn, I'd love to hear from you on that. And then Perry Plummer, I have a question
certainly.
For you, too.
Certainly. So certainly there are parallels between that event and this event, although every storm is different. If you look at the size of the Snowtober event and the impact on New Hampshire for PSNH, that was an event where our outages peaked at about 237,000 customers. Here, a little smaller, 209,000 customers. That event was a six-day restoration. This event was a three-day restoration. And I do think the quicker restoration was due in part to some of the learnings from that prior storm. Certainly, looking at multiple weather forecasts and trying to triangulate as you get closer to a more accurate prediction. And this discussion you had earlier about the pre-staging of crews and resources, you know, one of the things we are very proud of is that we have led, along with utilities across the rest of the country, the development of what's referred to as a national response event approach, where utilities provide mutual assistance on a voluntary basis and do so very quickly.
After the fact or before the fact?
Either. It could be, so a pre-staging would be before the fact and certainly after the fact. We at Northeast Utilities Public Service of New Hampshire led the formation of what is now referred to as the North Atlantic Mutual Assistance Program, which covers all of the Canadian provinces, New England, New York, down through the Mid-Atlantic. So we're all part of one mutual assistance network. We chair that. Our company chairs that. I happen to be the co-chair of the National Response Event Committee for the entire country. And, you know, that's the key variable, is getting resources into an impacted area just as quickly as we can. I think in this instance, you saw us ramp up very quickly at Public Service of New Hampshire. You know, basically a day after the event cleared the area, we had 1,000 line workers on the ground working, restoring customers. That's a tremendous response, in my mind, from the industry. The ability to manage those crews effectively is something we think we've become better at with each successive storm, and will continue to improve. But I think what you saw here were lessons learned put into application. And I recognize these storms can be frustrating to customers, but I think the company's response, and I would say New Hampshire's response overall, was excellent.
After the 2011, yet another major outage, U.S. Senators Gene Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte, Perry Plummer, they called for a federal review of national reliability standards for America's electric power grid. They expressed the frustration that people are feeling today, why we keep seeing these events. Did we ever see anything come out of that? And what are your thoughts, Perry, on the federal government's role in this? If anything, maybe this is more state by state, utility by utility. I don't know.
Yeah, certainly. I think that we're not unique in New Hampshire with a situation of large weather events that affect our electricity. That's for sure. So certainly, you know, looking at a national level makes some sense. I think that Bill just mentioned that you know, the coordination not only with our country but Canada as well. So, you know, I think a lot of stuff has come out of that. I think the strength of mutual aid agreements, far more communication between power companies, their emergency management people in each state or province, and also setting priorities of critical, you know, identifying critical infrastructure, getting that back up with their wastewater treatment plants. Those things truly have come out of that, and there's been a lot of good work. The truth is, if you're sitting at home on Main Street and you lose your power, you don't really notice all the other good things that have happened because you're sitting there without power. But, you know, we didn't have any wastewater plants that were problematic with drinking water. You know, those types of things have been taken care of, that critical infrastructure. So a lot of stuff has happened. There's still a lot to do. There's no question that electricity is so important to us that if it goes down, it's a problem. So we got to continue to look at making that more resilient. But certainly a lot of things have come out of those reports. I know our PUC was in our EOCs from like 4 o'clock on Wednesday, round the clock with us, communicating with the and have an oversight of the utility companies. Certainly there's a lot of eyes watching, but it's definitely a collaboration. We're all in this together, for sure, trying to get people back their power and back to their normal life.
Well, Laura, if I may add, you know, the North Atlantic Mutual Assistance Group and the National Response Event, those were the formation of those over the last 2 years were the direct results of questions raised after large events like Hurricane Katrina or Superstorm Sandy. That's what led the electric industry to form those alliances and partnerships. And I think we're all better as a result of that.
Lots of calls, gentlemen. Let's go to them. And Martha's in Hopkinton. Hi, Martha. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. Our issues are a little different here during the 2008 ice storm. And what happened was we didn't have a tree issue. What we had was an equipment issue. We had a rotted telephone or a power pole come down onto the road, and it took our transformer or whatever that thing is that you call that, that supplies to your home. And it turned out that that hadn't been replaced since 1961.
Wow.
Yes. And people arrived in their hazmat suits because it contained PCBs, because it was put in before a certain date. So my question is along with tree trimming, what is PSNH doing about old transformers and rotted poles and other things that affect people's power?
Wow, what a story, Martha. And from what I understand, Hopkinton took a while to get power back. So.
Yes, it did.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. And real quick, Bill, go ahead.
Certainly. So Public Service New Hampshire has several hundred thousand poles across New Hampshire, and we only own 50% of the poles in the state. The telephone companies own the others. Every one of our poles is inspected every 10 years for integrity, and if any issues are detected, immediately replaced. So when we replace them, we are building in additional resiliency. So based on what Sam said earlier, the poles we're installing today are bigger, larger diameter, and taller and more resilient as a way of preparing for future storms. In your particular instance, I don't know whether it was a PSNH pole or a telephone company pole.
Well, Martha, thank you for calling in. I had not thought about that. We focus so much on the trees, so thank you. Here's an email from Rod. He says, having listened to 30 minutes of your program today, so far all I've heard is responsible people trying to make excuses for their failings. Rod says, what we experienced over the holiday was today's standard corporate procedure in action, which simply means disregard the needs of customers, hire the minimum number of workers possible, but make sure that stockholders receive maximum returns on their investments. Rod says the power outage that occurred over Thanksgiving should not have happened. Rod, thank you for the email. And Sam Evans Brown, your broad thoughts on that. And then I have a specific question for you other gentlemen.
It's very hard to say how you could have a storm like that and have no power outages. So the concept that outage should not have happened, I think, is perhaps overstating it.
Given the mashed potato snow.
That said, I think that both of these gentlemen will know better than I do, Will, to what extent the assets were on hand ahead of schedule. It sounds like from what we've heard today that things were brought back up more quickly than in the past, so lessons perhaps were learned. The broader question of how to keep this type of event from occurring at all, I think, it's going to take more than just one kind of storm to sort out. If you think about it, what's the solution here? If the solution is to have a generator in each house so that when a storm does take out the grid, the cost of that it would be astronomical. And it's either a cost that's going to be borne by each individual homeowner, or if you were to have some sort of program to allow them to buy it, and that gets passed on through rates, you'd have huge electric rates. So it's a much bigger question than I think that email gives credit to.
Well, Rod, thank you very much for joining us by email. Did you quickly, Bill Quinn, want to address the issue of the minimum number of workers possible? We talked earlier about, whether extra crews were called in after the fact. Should they have been pre-staged before the fact? That gets expensive if you don't end up using
here.
Them.
At Public Service in New Hampshire, we staff for our day-to-day operations. We don't staff for, catastrophic storms. I do think these types of storms are unavoidable, given our weather patterns. One of the things that I think it's important to recognize is Public Service New Hampshire is part of the Northeast Utility System, and we rely very heavily on our sister companies in Massachusetts and Connecticut to help us respond. So an example of that is we have roughly 200 linemen here in New Hampshire. We have over 1,000 linemen across Northeast Utilities, and many of them came to New Hampshire to support us here. So we think by leveraging the collective strength of Northeast Utilities, it provides us a deep bench to respond to these types of events. There were, in fact, 200% more linemen in New Hampshire from our sister companies than there were from PSNH. And, the beauty of being able to have that available to us is on a day-to-day basis, that is not driving up our rates. So we staff for our day-to-day operations. We lean heavily on our sister companies during catastrophic events. And when we have to go beyond that, we believe We've put in place the infrastructure through mutual assistance to rely on other utilities across the country. It's the most cost-effective and generally effective way to deal with catastrophic events.
I do wonder, Perry Plummer, if one lesson from this is to have more pre-staging just in case. And, you know, if you end up having to pay people and they don't end up having to restore power, then, oh, well, at least we were ready. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this a little earlier. First of all, the PUC and the governor's office and through our office, we asked every storm, how many crews do you have available? What are you pre-staging? Where are they coming from? And so they're not operating in the dark. They let us know how many crews they're pre-staging and those type of things in the PUC. And the PUC is obviously experts in the field. With that being said, this storm was unique. It wasn't as predicted by the National Weather Service. You know, halfway through the storm, National Weather Service says, look, this is going on. At that point, it's too late. The storm's in the middle. So, you know, I have to admit, for what we saw, what was predicted, we feel the utility companies did pre-stage a lot of resources, the appropriate amount of resources. It turned out to be less than they needed because the storm changed. So that has to be looked at. How do you do that? But certainly pre-staging is a big part of storm preparation, both from the utilities and all the other pre-staging people at the EOC and all those things from a state response as well. With that being said, we are trying to help the situation. We are offering grants for local EOCs and local shelters for generation to get them up on generators so we can have our critical infrastructure up on generation during these storms so communities can continue to function and keep their people safe.
You know, we had an email earlier from someone, John, I think it was, who said, look, just get a generator, folks. You talked about the usefulness of that. You've got one yourself, but also some of the dangers. There was a death due to carbon monoxide poisoning. My question for you, how expensive, first of all, are these generators? I mean, we don't have one because we usually don't lose power.
Yeah,
in this instance,
it really depends. It's probably between $5,000 and $10,000 to have a whole house generator set up. Now, you know, some people can do it.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It's a wise investment if you can afford it. Certainly, when you're making decisions on building a new house, you make decisions on granite countertops and carpets and all those things. You know, would a generator be one of those decisions that you make when building a new house? With that being said, you can do it for far less money with an $800 portable generator and a hookup that's safe that they could plug in and start and run your key things, your refrigerator and your heat.
Well, especially with Thanksgiving, I had tons of food in my fridge. And let me tell you, I was kind of stressed
out. So certainly, in most cases, you know, sometimes your water supply because if you're on a well. So certainly you can do it for less than a whole house generator as well. That's not within everybody's means. So what we have to look at is a home plan. Does my neighbor have a generator? Does my uncle have a generator? Does my grandson have a generator? Can I go there? And try to make sure that you have a plan. What you have to ask yourself is, if we lose power, what's affected in our house? And how will we deal with it? And how do we get by? And how long is it going to take? So the situation is, if you know you're going to lose power for a couple hours, you can get by. If you're going to lose power for 3 days, your house is going to be cold. You're going to have issues. Pre-plan that. You can sit and talk about that on a Friday night over pizza rather than waiting till it happens. So, you know, that self-planning is very, very important. Very important.
Well, it's a great way to close out because we've talked so much about utility planning and state planning and so forth. But you're right, individual family planning, and guilty as charged. We almost never lose power, and this time we were out for a good 2 days.
And we'd really like to direct people to our website, which is nhready.gov, and it has a lot of tips on how to prepare your family for that. And we're saying, please self-prepare for the first 72 hours in any storm, floods, snowstorms, power outage, whatever. And there's a lot of tips there. We're also asking people to download New Hampshire Alerts, which will keep them informed. And you can do that right from that website. Keep them informed of what's going on with weather and
if you have power to keep your smartphone and laptop
charging
operated.
Stations are going to overtake warming stations for preparedness.
Well, all of you, so many comments also from our listeners. I just want to share a few as we close out. Jerry in Nashua says to expect that a utility should maintain staffing levels to address a major outage such as what we just experienced is lunacy. Jerry says electricity costs would be prohibitive. Madeline says we were impressed with the calm under pressure response of the power company. in our neighborhood. Keith says power was restored quickly. However, the reason I thought they cut back all the trees this summer was to prevent this from happening. Keith says the cutting was aggressive. And here's Betsy on Facebook. I wonder if the complaints would have been fewer if the storm and power outage had not occurred on Thanksgiving when families were planning gatherings, cooking, etc. Thanks for all those comments, folks. And thank you, gentlemen, very much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
this
you
is The Exchange on NHPR.